Welcome back to After Action. I'm your host, Damaris Garcia. With us today, we have a very special guest, Ambassador Gentry Smith, who is the Assistant Secretary for Diplomatic Security. Ambassador Smith has been leading DS for about 2 years now, but prior to that, he served over 30 years in diplomatic security as a special agent, including as Deputy Assistant Secretary for Countermeasures. He also served for a couple of years as State Department's Director of the Office of Foreign Mission, which DSS coordinates with quite regularly. Today, Ambassador Smith will tell us about his career and how he's seen DSS evolve across the decades. Sir, welcome.
Thank you, Damaris. It's a pleasure to be here.
So tell us a little bit about your tour in Rangoon, Myanmar.
Very interesting time. One of the first things that jumps out at me is the person that I replaced telling me that all I would need during my tour there was a softball glove, a tennis racket, and a good book, because, you know, sort of a sleepy location. It turned out to be anything but that for me. Our housing compound abutted the housing compound of Aung San Suu Kyi, who was under house arrest at this time,
right,
but was allowed to give speeches from her compound. So every weekend, there would be at least 3,000 to 5,000 persons who would line the streets, sit all weekend to listen to speeches by Aung San Suu Kyi. Soon after that, the government intervened and shut that down, mainly because students began to demonstrate.
Right.
And of course, one of those demonstrations ended up at the U.S. Embassy.
Oh.
Because they liked using the backdrop of the U.S. Embassy,
right,
as a representation for democracy.
Right.
And of course, the Marine calls, alerts us that there's a demonstration at the embassy. And when we react and arrive, we find persons sitting orderly, doing a peaceful demonstration and presenting their speeches. And after about an hour of their speeches, they decided to begin their march to the next location. Not knowing where they were going or how this might impact our other facilities, we followed. And at some point, the protesters stopped walking and opened a path for us to drive through. Once we got to the front of the demonstration, we understood why they had stopped. There was a battalion of riflemen waiting on the other side.
Okay.
And the demonstrators were smart enough to know that let the diplomats go through because now they're the buffer that's there between the riflemen and the rest of the crowd. That was the beginning of about a 3-hour standoff for us.
Wow.
At the end, we do feel that as being there, we were able to negotiate our way out.
Okay.
After about 3 hours. Had we not been there, I'm pretty sure that the riflemen would have not hesitated to fire if
right,
ordered to do so.
So even playing a role in shaping the local politics, right, and national politics in a way with our presence in the country.
Very much so. Not something you would expect in your role as an RSO, but there are always surprises.
Right,
and,
right.
You know, so just be prepared for them.
Now, this is just one of many adventures that you had. There's one post, I think, that probably might stand out, which is Cairo, Egypt.
Well, of course, Cairo is going to stand out because, you know, we served there twice.
Oh.
It was my first post serving abroad. And as I was telling a group not too long ago, it was actually my first time ever traveling outside of the U.S.
Okay.
It was a great experience. Over those two tours, I made contacts and friends with the persons that I served with on the ground out there that I still have to today.
Right.
But definitely prepared me for other things that were to happen to me during my career. My first tour that we went there, terrorism was quite impactful.
Yeah.
Around the world. And Egypt was no different. The mission at that time was one of the largest, we would argue the largest, operations that we had outside of the U.S. We had an assassination of an Egyptian government official one block from the embassy during that first tour. We also had Operation Desert Shield and Into Desert Storm,
So this was during which years that you
this
were
this was 89 to 91. Okay. So we the first Gulf War.
Right.
And of course, leading up to that was a lot of VIP visits into Cairo. Secretary of State visited on numerous occasions. And then the president came because of the fact that we were aligned with Egypt very closely during that Gulf War. So lots of experience during that tour. And then returning there 10 years later in a more senior role within the RSO office. And shortly after getting there, we had the coal bombing.
Oh.
And as a result of the coal bombing, I was dispatched over to Yemen for 1 month to assist with the office there and also assist with a lot of the personnel that were coming from the U.S. to support that investigation and that operation from the FEST unit that was deployed. But the next year from that was 9/11. What's not really recognized is the fact that there are about 50,000 Americans that are in Egypt at any one time between
right.
tourism, business, and just other activities in the country.
Right.
It was very quickly understood by all of our personnel that this was a Al-Qaeda terrorist attack.
Right. Okay.
And we didn't know where the next attack would be.
Right.
So it became very important for us to secure those 50,000 Americans that we knew were interspersed throughout the country, working with our Egyptian counterparts there and a lot of personnel in very high positions within the Egyptian government. We were able to put a program in place rather quickly for that initial phase of that incident. And then following on, of course, being able to collaborate with the Egyptians in the investigation, because it was not shortly after that discovered that there were Egyptians that were involved in that attack as well.
So you were also involved in the whole 9/11 investigation from the terrorist national side?
Correct.
Okay.
And the other piece that I would incorporate with the coal bombing was the fact that as a result of the coal bombing, there was a concern from the U.S. naval side on what were secure routes for U.S. vessels to travel, you know, around the world. And getting from the Atlantic Ocean and beyond to the Indian Ocean and other locations, Suez Canal was a major route.
Yeah.
And there was a lot of work done to put into place a system for securing our ships that transited the Suez Canal. Surprisingly, the RSO office in Cairo took a major role in that, also in coordination with the defense attaché, but we ended up riding ships through the Suez Canal for months. You know, if you haven't taken a small boat out to a big ship in the dark with waves going up and down and
right.
having to dismount one and mount the other, you haven't lived.
Mm.
If you survive the terrorism, your challenge is not getting dumped into the high seas
okay.
as you're going from one boat to the other.
No, I'm good. I think I could live without that experience. Thank you.
Yeah, I recommend it at some point. But yeah, do it in the daylight. It's a little, you feel a little bit more comfortable.
Okay. Now, you mentioned the role of protecting, in some capacity, over 50,000 American citizens mm-hmm. in that country. What role does DSS usually have in protecting American citizens in a situation where there may be an imminent terrorist attack or there's a terrorist threat mm-hmm. to Americans?
Well, our mission as DSS is, you know, to protect our personnel, protect our national security information, and protect our facilities.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what we will do on the side as it relates to our responsibilities with the department. But it's always broader than that. You know, through OSAC, we're very involved with the U.S. business community, you know, educational institutions that have operations abroad, with faith-based organizations.
Oh, right. Okay.
Yeah.
And like NGOs and all, and,
yeah, and NGOs. And so that's always going to be a broader stroke. And then, as in the case in Egypt, in those locations where you know that there's high tourism or that you're just going to have a large flow of U.S. citizens in that country, you will partner with the host country, consular affairs, and American Citizen Services in ways of just assisting that government in ensuring that they have procedures in place that would add to the security of our personnel right. and our citizens as they travel abroad and work abroad, study abroad, and just exercise their freedoms around the world.
I mean, these are just some highlights of your over 30-year career.
True.
What do you think are some of the other experiences that help to actually lead us forward now as diplomatic security?
I think that one of the important things for persons in diplomatic security is having that broad range of experiences, of having that international flavor that you're going to get if you're in this organization,
yeah,
and that blended with the domestic side as well. You know, for myself, I know that I joined this organization because I wanted to see the world.
Yeah.
But I also understand that part of that is learning how the U.S. Department of State functions
yeah.
and how diplomatic security functions from a domestic perspective. And I think that all of that is important if you're going to do this job and you're going to do it well. For me personally, on the domestic side,
yeah.
The experiences that I had here in the U.S. played greatly into the role of preparing me, I think, for going into roles of leadership. Headquarters assignments, working on the secretary's protective detail.
Yeah.
I served three different secretaries of state during the time that I was there, during some very historic times, you know.
Yeah.
The Middle East peace process, the relationship thawing and warming with Russia at that time, the emergence of the CIS states. And living through all of that, walking through that history or having a front seat at that point in history, I learned a lot. I met a lot of Foreign Service colleagues who are in positions of leadership to this very day. Because of that, we formed a relationship that has been very beneficial to me as I have assumed more leadership roles. Within diplomatic security itself, coming back to other headquarters assignments, whether that was with the director of physical security programs at a time when I would focus on activities in Iraq and shortly after that in Afghanistan were critical for just a lot of modernization, a lot of contingency operations that we were looking at during that time. We had to be agile enough that we could develop systems that provided our personnel and our colleagues secure operations in manners in which we had not done before. Being able to think in ways that we could develop programs, develop materials, and I'd say moderate our operations in a way to where we were answering the mail became very important. Moving from that over to countermeasures
yeah.
and having the physical security responsibility, the technical security responsibility, and leadership of the diplomatic couriers, again, at a time when we were providing support in ways that persons hadn't experienced before.
During your time as Deputy Assistant Secretary of Countermeasures, mm-hmm. you're now exposed to leading a directorate of engineers, technicians, couriers.
Correct.
Navy Seabees.
Correct.
In addition to throughout your career working with civil service, personal service contractors,
exactly.
Local guards,
yeah.
local investigators,
yeah. RSTs,
regional security technicians. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Persons with a lot of expertise that we yeah. need in order to get the job done and to do it in a way in which you know, we can be very effective at what we do.
And also taking care of our own, I think, has been one of your priorities as well.
Yeah, we're 40,000 plus, but we're still a family.
Yeah.
And that's something that I really appreciate today.
I have seen a shift in DS leadership support of diversity, inclusion,
yes.
equity in our organization as well. That's something that has become a priority.
It is important. You know, the secretary has made the point that he wants the department to represent what America looks like.
Right.
I share that, as does the other leadership. I love the efforts that we put forth. We look at the Clark Fellowship that we now have as another step along those lines. And there's more. There will be more to come. This is something that DS, again, took a leadership role in this. Yeah. We demonstrated to others how it is to be done And we're always looking for ways in which we can improve on that as well.
So in your opinion, how have we evolved as an organization? And I'm talking about, you know, you joining in the late 80s and seeing so many things across your career to today, right? We're talking assassinations, East Africa bombings, the USS Cole bombing, Benghazi.
Yeah, well, you know, one would always hope that progression was linear, but we answer what's on our plate. And you're absolutely right. When I came in, there was a strong focus on terrorism because that's what we were seeing. That was the origin of diplomatic security, was bombings. And but we have seen challenges placed on top of challenges, from terrorism to counterintelligence threats to cyber to just a growth of different ways in which our adversaries come at us to attack personnel, national security information, facilities. It covers the gamut. The training for diplomatic security has had to evolve to address the additional challenges that we face. I think we've been, again, quite agile in doing that.
Thank you, Ambassador Smith, for being with us today and giving us a little bit of your history and stories.
Thank you, Damaris. Always a pleasure. Love the organization. Love diplomatic security, and always happy to engage and talk about it.